Good afternoon, members. Welcome to another week. We're glad to see you all, and we will officially call the House Education Finance Committee to order. Representative Slocum, just wanted to say it's we're glad to have you back this week, and on my own behalf and that of the entire committee, we'd like to express our deepest sympathy to you on the loss of your father. And I read the obituary information sent down about him, and he sounds like quite a character. I'm sorry to not have known him. So please know that we have all been thinking of you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. He was quite a character, and I want you to know there were three. Well, my dad in spirit, Chuck Slocum, who used to be chair of the Republican Party.
Not the same man.
Yes, was a very nice man, friend of the family, has been since he was 16 years old. And then the Reverend Chuck Slocum from Oregon, who did the service. So there were three, and of course my dad's spirit was there too. So three people, Chuck Slocum. It was interesting. Thank you, though, and I appreciate all the sentiment that I got. I got emails when I was feeling really pretty down. I'm the oldest, so a lot fell on my shoulders, and I really appreciate your thoughts. Thank you.
Thank you, and we have all been thinking of you and your family, and we're very pleased to see you back with us today. So, all right, let's see, Representative... Yes. Representative Detmer, would you like to move the minutes of our last meeting, February 19th?
So do.
All right. Any discussion? All in favor of approving the minutes February 19th, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Minutes adopted. All right. Representative Anderson, welcome. So, members, just for your information, we're hearing a series of bills all having to do with a legislation that will go to the tax committee. So they are items, tax credits, and that would be funded if the tax committee decides to do that and move the bills on. So they are not items that are funded out of this committee's jurisdiction, but because they're all oriented around provisions dealing with education and education expenses, I thought we should hear it today. So that's what we're doing. And Representative Anderson, I will move House File 72 be re-referred to taxes. And with that, we would welcome your testimony. Thank you.
Great. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for the time for the committee. I will be very brief. What my bill does, it extends the education expense credit to pre-kindergarten expenses. I think we are blessed to be in a state that values education, and more parents are trying to get a head start on their children's education, and so they spend more time on the pre-K level getting their child prepared for kindergarten, and I want to recognize that fact by extending the K-12 credit to pre-kindergarten expenses. And that's it in a nutshell.
All right, thank you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Anderson, is this available to non-itemizers? I'm just fuzzy on the details.
Representative Anderson.
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney, if you look at the K-12 education credit as it's written now, it's for single filers and also married joint filers. But we do have Ms. Nancy is here if we need further clarification.
Representative Dan.
If she could, please.
Yes. Ms. Manzi, here she comes. And for the Education Committee's benefit, Ms. Manzi is one of our nonpartisan House tax staff. And so if you would please introduce yourself for the record, and then you can enlighten us all on the current state of the law. Thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Nina Manzi. I work in the House Research Department. Representative Dabney, the K-12 education credit is not limited to itemizers or non-itemizers. It's a credit targeted toward lower-income filers, so anyone who meets the requirements of the credit may claim it. The K-12 education subtraction was at one time limited to people who claimed itemized deductions on their federal return. That ended in tax year 1998. The 1997 K-12 bill, which enacted the K-12 credit, also removed the restriction on the K-12 subtraction that limited it to people who itemized deductions at the federal level.
Thank you very much.
All right, thank you. Any other questions for Ms. Manzi? All right, any other questions for Representative Murphy?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Ms. Manzi, do we have any idea of how many new people would be granted this education credit? New
Ms.
families?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, typically, the Department of Revenue would include that sort of information in a revenue estimate, and their priorities for preparing revenue estimates are for when the bills are scheduled for in the tax committee in either the House or Senate. So an estimate for this bill has not been prepared yet this session. However, we do have an estimate from 2007 for a similar bill that would have extended the credit and subtraction to both pre-K expenses using the same definition as is used in House File 72 and to museum memberships. So the older bill is a little broader in scope than this bill is. So now looking at that estimate, that estimate was that I think about 60,000 returns, if that estimate, you know, things may have changed since then as far as the composition of the population, how many people there are with young children, and so forth. But if it were still 2007, I think the number for this bill would be 60,000 returns.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Murphy. Additional questions? Right. Is there anyone, member of the public or in the audience, who wishes to testify on House File 72? All right, not seeing anyone coming forward. Representative Anderson, any closing comments?
No, ma'am.
All right, well, thank you. I would then renew my motion that House File 72 be referred to Tax Committee. And so the motion is before the committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? All right, motion passes, and House File 72, it's on the way to Tax Committee. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson. And you have another bill, so you'll just stay put, and we'll finish with you before we move on to the next one. So House File 667 is the next piece of legislation we'll consider. So I will move that House File 667 be passed and re-referred to Tax Committee. And you don't have any amendments, so with that, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. What this bill does is it extends the a K-12 education credit, increases the threshold on the amount. It also increases the phase out, and it puts it up from $33,500 up to $50,000. And that's the gist of the bill and what it does.
Thank you. Did you have any testifiers, Representative Anderson?
I do not.
Okay. Any questions for Representative Anderson? All right. Seeing none, any member of the audience or the general public who wishes to testify on House File 667? If so, please come down. All right. Not seeing any members wishing to testify. With that, I would renew my motion, and I move that House File 667 be passed and re-referred to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Motion's agreed to. That's it. All right. Thank you very much, Representative Anderson.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair. These two bills went to the Tax Committee, and I assume that other times we may have other bills that go to the Tax Committee also. Will those bills come back to this committee then from taxes, or have we just endorsed the concept?
Thank you, Representative Murphy. No, those two bills we just did will not come back to the Education Finance Committee. Again, they are now in the purview of the Tax Committee, and it will be up to the wisdom of the tax committee as to whether or not they decide to include them in an omnibus tax bill or however the chair plans to dispense with them.
Madam Chair,
Representative Murphy.
Our Ways and Means Chair is here today. Is that, Madam Chair, and maybe Representative Naba, is then the tax committee is the last word on education policy finance bills?
Representative Knobloch, did you want to comment on that?
Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. First of all, I know I am a member of the committee, an ex officio member, and I realize I've been somewhat delinquent in my attendance, but of course I can't attend every single finance committee that I'm an ex officio member of. But Representative Murphy, it is good to be here today. Basically, the bills that I think you're questioning are bills that are, if they are to be funded, are funded out of the tax committee target because they are tax credits. And for that reason, they would be referred to the tax committee for their final disposition.
We should join up with the tax committee. Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Knobloch.
Thank you. And I think, Representative Murphy, you ask a good question. Again, as I stated, I just wanted the members of the Education Finance Committee to be aware of those bills and what their purpose is and what the proposed change to them would be, because it doesn't have an implication for our citizens and our families if it moves forward with regards to education expenses for people's children, but the money does not come from our particular target. So. All right, so next up I will call Representative Brunbeck, if you are prepared, for House File 359. Welcome, Representative Brunbeck.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. Thanks to the committee for hearing House File 359.
All right, and I will move it to officially have us before us. So the chair would move House File 359 be passed and referred to the Committee on Taxes. And with that, please go ahead and tell us about your bill.
Very good. Thank you. And I'm here today with a bill that we passed last year. And it was really to work with the people in Decoding Dyslexia. It's an organization in Minnesota, but also a national group of parents, really, who are advocating for their children who suffer from dyslexia. And the bill last year had a couple of issues that we're fixing. The gatekeeper provision was very narrow, which made it, as far as a tax credit for specialized reading instruction, made it less than useful to parents. And then to extend it to be a five-year program. And so those are kind of two small things. And then to better define who is eligible to participate and receive the tax credit. So those are the three changes to the bill, and I'd be happy to have with me Rachel Berger, who is the director, really, volunteer director of Decoding Dyslexia in Minnesota, and several other folks who've been very active over the last couple of years trying to advocate and make sure their children are receiving specialized instruction.
All right. Thank you, Representative Runbeck. And did you have a question, Representative Hertas? Go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I was just reading in the overview here. It refers to this as both a credit and a deduction. On tax forms, deductions have the benefit of the marginal tax rate in terms of the savings to the claimant, but a credit is a dollar-for-dollar deduction of taxes. So could you clarify which it is?
Representative Brunbeck.
Yes, Madam Chair and Representative Hertas, it is a tax credit, and I would not think that the word deduction occurs in the bill, but perhaps somebody has a little more knowledge of bill language than I do, but it is a tax credit.
Representative Hertas, and I don't know, is Ms. Manzi, why don't we have you come up and clarify that so the committee members are...
Yeah, Madam Chair, I was just looking at the House Research overview where it referred to claim the K-12 education deduction or credit, and I was just looking for clarification of that.
Yeah, and I think, again, because some of this gets into the details of things that we talk about a lot. I happen to serve on the tax committee as well, but we don't get into the details of that in this committee, so I think for the benefit of all members, we'll have Ms. Manzi describe the provision.
Madam Chair, Nina Manzi from House Research. Representative Furtas, the bill that Representative Runbeck has is a tax credit for the types of expenses that she will describe. The language in the overview is meant to communicate that when people claim the tax credit that Representative Runbeck's bill proposes, they will only be able to do that using expenses that they have not used to claim the existing K-12 education credit or the existing K-12 education expense deduction. So they will be using expenses to claim only one tax benefit.
Thank you, Ms. Manzi. I think that makes it much clearer. We appreciate that.
She makes it so simple.
All right, Representative Runbeck, would you like to have your testifiers present their remarks?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. And I do have, I don't know what order you'd like to go in. Why don't you call that out, Rachel?
Madam Chair, I'd like to have Michaela Smith testify first.
All right, very well. Welcome. If you please just state your name for the record, and we would be interested in your testimony.
Okay. Hi. I'm Michaela Smith, and I'm dyslexic. I was born and raised here in St. Paul, Minnesota. I was trying very hard to learn to read, but it wasn't clicking. And by the time I was in second grade, I felt like I would never be able to read or write. I was diagnosed with dyslexia at the beginning of second grade. It's hard for kids who have invisible disabilities like dyslexia because our disability is too often misunderstood. I can't put emphasis on that enough. I still have professors who ask me, can you explain that better, please? So what is dyslexia? Well, every day in second grade, go back there, someone would be chosen to go to the front of the class and write certain words of the month and write the month we're in. And I was asked to do it. And my teacher knew I was dyslexic. And I went up there. And I still remember the words. It was bread, walk, and some other ones. And the month was February. I still can't spell February. Save my life. So I was up there for 15 minutes before I began to cry because I did not know how to write the words on the board. And because it was looked at as a challenge for the students in second grade, none of my friends could come up and help me, so I was standing up there for a while. And I was humiliated, and I still remember it to this day. And it stays with me, and I want to work with kids, and I do right now. So I don't want another kid to go through that. So, though we found I was dyslexic at an early age, I didn't learn to read a book until I was in fifth grade. Our schools are not set up to help dyslexic children to learn to read as necessary for their specific instructions needed. Once a teacher told my mom that I should get a tutor, and I come from a low-income family, we can't afford that. It shouldn't have gotten to that point anyways. So that was not an option for my family. Even though we were lucky that I found out early, I still struggled to learn to read, and still had many teachers who did not believe dyslexia was real. And they weren't sure to help a student who has dyslexia, much less prepared to teach one. Dyslexia is real. We need to acknowledge it and help our teachers to understand the need for students who have invisibly struggle with it. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. Smith. We appreciate your testimony. Thank you for your bravery in being here today.
Madam Chair, I'd like to have Rachel Berger talk us through the problem with last year's bill and the gatekeeper provision that was so very narrow that it really didn't serve the purpose.
Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
My name's Rachel Berger. So last year we passed a tax credit that we felt would be useful to the parents who are helping their children with dyslexia. as well as ideally any child who has a struggle to gain literacy and is behind. So we worked on that last year to pass tax credit so that parents could do what they deem necessary to help their child succeed. And unfortunately, as things ended up, there were unintended consequences of that, and it narrowed, I suppose, you know, kind of fenced in the ability for people to actually get at and access that. In our knowledge, there were only maybe a handful of people that had the ability to access it, and still we won't find out until the tax season whether or not they fully could use the credit or not. So going back at it this year, the idea was to open it up so that it would allow the people that it was intended for access to the tax credit in order to one, give those parents the discretion to help their children.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Representative Mallory, did you have a question?
Yes, Madam Chair, thank you. I've been trying to read through real quickly. Is it a refundable credit or not?
Ms. Berger or Representative Brundage, is it a refundable credit was the question?
Madam Chair and Representative Mallory, no, it is not.
I believe it is refundable.
Madam Chair, last year what was enacted was refundable.
I think Ms. Manzi. All right. Ms. Manzi is going to check the session statute from last year's provision, and we'll come back to that to get clarification. Thank you. Other questions at this point? Ms. Berger.
Madam Chair, I'd like to point out that while there is a credit here for the parents who are going outside of their public schools and providing this extra help to their children who are struggling either A, as a reader, or someone with specific disability of dyslexia, I want to point out that the parents are still on the hook for 75% of the cost of this tutoring. Tutoring per the specific need can range from $6,000 to $8,000 a year, depending on the frequency that's necessary to bring that child up to grade level. So I just want to point out to the committee that this is not something that is where they're getting a complete and total refund. The parents still have to dedicate a significant amount of finance for this, as well as the time.
Thank you, Ms. Berger. Great. you have another test? Oh, Ms. Manzi? I think she's located the statute, so we'll have her clarify for us what the law that was in place last year was.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. This provision was enacted, as you've heard, for 1 year only, and because of that, it's in the session law rather than in the statute. But it was indeed enacted as a refundable credit.
Thank you. Thanks for that clarification. Representative Erickson.
So, Madam Chair, and Ms. Manzi, could you come back?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Maybe we'll have you just sit back there, Ms. Manzi. You seem to be a popular witness.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, Ms. Manzi, because it was enacted as refundable for 1 year only, then that causes further dilemma, does it not, for the reading credit that was to apply to so many of our families?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, Representative Runbeck's bill would change the eligibility requirements for the reading credit retroactively to last tax year and then extend it for five more tax years through tax year 2019.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. But Ms. Manzi, can we really make a tax credit refundable retroactively? I suppose if we say we want to do that, but do we typically do something like retroactivity?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Erickson, it's not common, but it certainly can be done. People affected by it would have to file. Most likely this bill would not be enacted until after the close of the filing season for tax year 2014, the regular due date of April 15th, 2015. People affected would then have to file an amended state return to claim the refund for a credit from tax year 2014.
All right. Thank you. Any other questions of Representative Slocum?
This is a question for Ms. Smith. Your testimony was delightful, composed, beautiful, wonderful, and very professionally done. My question is, with the tutoring running $7,000 a year, how would paying 75% of that affect your family? Would you have received tutoring under this bill?
Ms. Smith.
So, like I said, my parents couldn't afford tutoring. We were recommended to different tutoring businesses, and if we would have had some help, we probably could afford it. At the time when I was offered tutoring, I probably would have been able to get more help. I mean, growing up with being dyslexic, I didn't need help after when I hit ninth grade because I went on my own to learn to read at the level that I was supposed to be. So, I mean, I would read books over and over and over again on my own time. But if I would have had time for if I could have got tutoring, it probably would have been farther and it would have been easier for me in high school, middle school, and elementary school.
Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, but my question is, if the tutoring, you said you came from a family that had a hard time affording the tutoring when you were younger. This bill, the person, family getting the tutoring would be paying 75% of what I just heard was $7,000, $8,000 a year for the tutoring. Would this bill help, I mean, would it help your family? For you, as a younger kid, to get the tutoring you needed at the time? Or is this more for those that can afford the $7,000, $8,000 a year for tutoring, and then they get a tax break?
And Madam Chair, maybe I can jump in here. I mean, the idea was that the tax credit was not the most desirable fix, let's just say, but it's a temporary sort of placeholder for those parents who are seeking, you know, instruction and help now. But I think that the long-term goal would be more of a literacy program that identifies dyslexia in the schools and is able to provide a little bit more at the local level. But I'll have Jane Conlon, who is a teacher, can describe that.
Good morning and good afternoon, Madam Chair. My name is Jane Conlon. I'm a teacher. I have 30-plus years of experience. I've been in the private schools, I've been in the public schools, and I've been in the charter schools. And I'm also a special ed teacher with experience in that area. And I can tell you that although my colleagues are very concerned about the students who are not meeting their benchmarks, many, many of my colleagues don't know what dyslexia is, and they don't know what to do for these kids in their classes. And what's happening then is our parents are having their children fall through the cracks, and they are desperate to find out what they can do to help their children. The teachers are desperate to help these kids and don't know how. And so then they find the outside tutoring. And the outside tutoring, when it is the research-based method to help these kids, it works. And it costs families a lot of money. And the families, any kind of support they can get financially is going to help, because time-wise, they're really pushing it for extra tutoring. Financially, they're pushing it, and it's a burden emotionally and financially for these families. Any break we can give them, we should. Thank you.
Thank you. Representative Detmer.
Yeah, thank you, Madam Chair. And to the last testifier, when you go through your training in college for special education, do you receive training in dyslexia?
No, sir, we do not. I have a master's degree, and with special education, I did not have anything about dyslexia. My daughter was diagnosed. I'm in the system, and I couldn't find anybody to help her, and I had to figure out how to get my own training and flew to California to work with an expert in dyslexia in order to get certified to teach my own daughter how to read.
Representative Detmer.
Madam Chair, maybe just a follow-up. So I'm assuming that our higher education has no training for special education teachers in dyslexia.
My experience is that is correct, sir.
Okay, thank you.
Ms. Berger.
I'd like to add for the gentleman who just spoke that
That is one of our long-term goals, though, is to help affect policy for teacher professional development, both in the higher ed and with the teachers that are, you know, our pre-service and in-service teachers, is to help get that knowledge out there. So we do have, aside from this tax credit, which is a short-term fix for us, our long-term goals do support having the early identification, the early appropriate remediation, teacher professional development as well.
Other questions from committee members? Did you have additional testifiers, Representative Runbeck?
I'm sure I don't. Just a final comment, if I could.
All right. Let me see if there's anybody in the audience who wishes to testify on this bill. All right. I don't see anybody rushing down, so Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just like Representative Detmer, I was extremely surprised to find out that the term dyslexia has become kind of buried within the public school system and the training that teachers receive. And knowing that, according to research, that one in five young people suffer from some form of dyslexia or reading disability, it's a really important area to start focusing on and drawing attention to. And I'm so glad for the decoding dyslexia folks. They've done a great job.
All right, thank you. Representative Mullery.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just a little confused. They keep saying that you still have to pay 75%, and the brief says the credit equals 75% of it. So am I missing something?
All right. Ms. Berger.
Perhaps I can address that. It depends. Number one, I'm not great with math. So it depends on the intensity of the tutoring, that the student needs, and where they go to receive that tutoring. But tutoring generally costs between $6,000 and $8,000 a year. So a $3,000 credit is not 75% of. I mean, the parents are paying the majority is the point.
I think Ms. Manzi, if you want to come up and just, if you could mechanically describe how the credit would work.
Madam Chair and Representative Mullery, the credit as written equals 75% of the tutoring expenses up to a maximum credit of $2,000. So for tax year 14, the year that the credit was enacted for, the maximum expenses that would be offset by the $2,000 credit would be whatever number 2,000 is 75% of, which is going to be 3,000 and something. The House File 359 proposes to increase the maximum credit to $3,000. So for the first $4,000 of tutoring expenses, it would be offset at the 75% rate of the credit, and you would get the $3,000 credit. If you had expenses above $4,000, those would not be offset at all by the credit. So I think that Ms. Berger's point is that the actual percentage that is offset by the credit would depend on how much you spent. But the rate of the credit is 75% up to the maximum of $2,000 in the law for tax year 14, and then proposed at $3,000 for tax years 2015 to 2019.
Thank you. Thank you, Ms. Manzi. I think that's much clearer for all of us. Any other questions from committee members? All right. Representative Runbeck, any final comment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thanks for your attention. And will this be going on then to tax committee?
Yes, that's where it's headed. All right. So with that, I would renew my motion that House File 359 be passed and sent on to the tax committee. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed?
No.
One opposed? All right. Motion passes, and your bill is on its way to the tax committee. Thank you, Representative Runbeck, and testifiers.
Thank you.
Right. Representative Erdahl. There you are.
Thank you.
Welcome, Representative Erdahl.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair.
And I will officially bring your bill before the committee. So the chair moves that House File 245 be moved on or be referred to Tax Committee. And I believe you have an author's amendment. The A2 amendment members should be in your packets. Representative Erdahl, would you like to briefly explain your amendment?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Members, the amendment actually two parts. The first part clarifies what a core content area is so that someone who is applying for a master's degree will make sure that it is in an area that is applicable. The second part deals with the pay schedule. We actually discovered a little glitch here where if someone actually did do a master's degree program in only 1 year, not real likely, but it could happen, and if they did, they would not be eligible to collect the $2,500 in this bill unless we did this amendment. So that takes care of that.
All right. So in order to have the bill in the shape the author would like it, I would move the A2 amendment. All in favor?
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. Your amendment has been added. And Representative Erdahl, why don't you explain your bill?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And what this bill does is, very simply grants a teacher who achieves a master's degree in their content area a $2,500 tax credit. A master's degree varies in cost, but, $15,000 is a decent number to look at as to what this does. Now, what is the intent in this bill? I'll be brief with this, but maybe you've heard me tell the story before. Several years ago, I was in Finland, and there on a vacation, my wife being a Finlander, I also, though, was there to do a little investigation into the education system of Finland, which I had heard a lot about. And so I visited schools in Finland. I asked an administrator to what do they attribute the high standards and the high ranking of Finland in the world in terms of education, and he said three things: teachers, teachers, teachers. All of our teachers have to have a master's degree, and it has to be in the content area in which they teach. And so with that, and he told me some other things that are not included in this bill but are in others that you'll probably be hearing later on, an investigation back here discovered that in Minnesota at that time, 3 out of 5 teachers who got a master's degree, and only about half of our teachers in Minnesota get master's degrees, but 3 out of 5 did not get one in their content area. Since then, I've discovered other statistics that it's more likely 90% of our teachers don't get master's degrees in their content area, but so somewhere between 60 and 90% don't. And what I'm trying to do with this is to offer an incentive for teachers to actually get a degree in what they teach. Now, is this a magic panacea? No. Is it an absolute that you become a better teacher if you have a master's degree in your content area? No. But in a general sense, it is my firm belief that if you know more about what you're teaching, you're a better teacher. And this will at least move us, I would hope, in that direction. Is it enough money? I guess that remains to be seen. How much will this incentivize people? It certainly is an opportunity, it's a chance, but it's not a mandate in that if somebody wants to get a master's degree in something else, they still can. It's just that the state's not going to help them in that regard. Should there be other groups in this? Should we look at national board certified teachers and include those? Maybe at some point we should. But what I'm trying to do with this is stay focused. For one reason, it's easier to monitor how the impact is, but also it keeps the cost down. In terms of cost, the fiscal analysis I have of this is
that it would cost, this is all into the next biennium, so these are all tails. It's not cost in this biennium. $2,500 in 2018 and $2.5 million in 2018 and $3 million in 2018 and thereafter. So that cost likely will be adjusted, and I would think downward, because this was done with the expectation that all teachers now are getting masters in their content areas, which they aren't. So that, I guess, is my presentation. I did have, when I gave this last time to Education and Innovation, Dr. Eric Jolly from the Science Museum came in and testified to the very important impact on master's degree content area and his experience and his research. I'll just read a couple of things here. The more nuanced evidence suggests that master's degrees in math and science do confer an instructional advantage on teachers of those subjects, yet approximately 90% of the master's degrees held by teachers come from education programs that tend to be unrelated to or unconcerned with instructional efficacy. From 1982 to 2000, the percentage of teachers who had earned a master's degree in their subject area fell from 17% to 5%. So with that, I have one testifier.
All right, and I have a couple of questions, so I think we'll do questions before we get to your testifier. Representative Erickson?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Erdahl, I'm rather befuddled here. According to your statistics, teachers aren't earning master's degrees, and yet I know on the salary schedules that we move by steps and lanes, and our goal is always to get to that last lane. I'll just use a chart by which I would say to the far right. I wanted to get to the farthest part of the chart that I could. But when I was teaching, you didn't have to have a master's degree to do that. You could accumulate credits. But I know that my school district changed that while I was still teaching. But what are you really saying about the data then on who's getting to that farthest point on the steps and lanes, the lanes piece that I'm referring to, without a master's degree in something?
Representative Erdahl.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erickson, about half of the teachers in Minnesota do get a master's degree. Others, as you are suggesting, and I suppose it depends on the school district how they pay for it, but others do, and frankly I was one of them, compiled enough credits to get a master's degree, but never actually got one. Mm-hmm. So you can go, yes, to the far right without getting the degree.
Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So I didn't think that would still be the policy of school boards. I thought that it had to be, or I suspected that it was changing to a master's degree, and I know that most of my colleagues earned it in curriculum, for which I did not want to earn a master's degree. I wanted it in my content area. But, I'm just a little surprised by that, that districts are still allowing that to occur, because we can't have more than one curriculum director probably in a small school and maybe three or four in larger schools, so... Enough said. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Representative Slocum.
Madam Chair, I'm really talking a lot today.
Yes, you are.
Well, Representative Slocum, I've hardly seen you this year, so I appreciate it.
I'm hurt. I was here before. Anyway, I'm going to be really nice to you, Representative Rudolph.
Good.
I love this bill. I have long believed that to teach school, you need an academic major, a core academic major in undergraduate.
Yeah.
And then go on to a year of teacher preparation, student teaching. So I love this. I taught for longer than I want to remember in Minneapolis, and I was a mentor teacher, and I was a resident teacher coordinator where I had 8 to 10 teachers that were a little leery about teaching in such a diverse environment, and so they got a little help. And I had numerous student teachers over the course of my career, and I sent student teachers back because they didn't know anything. They came to me from the college where the majority of them came from, but I won't, the university. But they were not prepared. They could spout all kinds of, yeah, there's a lot of universities, so ha-ha. But they could spout all kinds of theory, okay? And, they could talk curriculum, but they didn't know anything about American history, and I was teaching 8th grade, so it wasn't rocket science, but I did expect my student teachers to know their history, their American history, to know from the Civil War on was what I was directed to teach for a number of years, and they didn't know anything, much less be able to tell any kind of interesting stories that would engage the kids. Which is basically what makes a good teacher. You got to have them engaged, and you got to know something. If you don't know anything, you don't have much to teach. I love your bill.
Thank you.
Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Rudolph, I read this thing about elementary school teachers, but I don't understand what you're saying. What's the core program that an elementary teacher, is that like math, science,
Madam
language
Chair,
arts?
Representative Murphy, it has to be in one of the areas that they actually teach. You know, I know that an elementary teacher has to have a wide range of things that they teach. Could be math, English, social studies. In one of those areas that they teach, that's a core area, and that's what they would get a master's in.
Representative Murphy.
So, Madam Chair, Representative Erdahl. So the elementary teacher would have a great choice of what to pick from.
They would have more choice, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, certainly more choice than a high school teacher would. But I didn't know how else to do it.
And
Representative Murphy.
Okay. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. Representative Ansels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. frankly, Representative Erdahl, most of the members of this committee, I would say, represent silk stocking districts. And so, therefore, they aren't getting the input that those of us who represent poor rural districts, small poor rural districts, and that input that we're getting is we can't find teachers. Let alone having an incentive and a tax credit to create master teachers, we can't find them. We can't attract people to come to our small, poor, rural area to teach chemistry and calculus and the sciences. I don't mind your bill. I wonder how you arrived at $2,500. I don't think a $2,500 stipend or credit is enough to encourage and motivate a teacher in a small, poor, rural district to go on and get a master's degree. So would you be willing to comment on that?
I certainly would, Madam Chair.
You have a small, rural, poor district.
Yes, I taught in a small, rural, poor district Poor rule. But anyway, yeah. In terms of, well, first of all, to address your concern about shortages, I got bills for that coming. Don't worry.
Okay.
We got other bills. This is only two of eight. But anyway, I do share your concern in that area, and you know, I am seriously working on that with some other bills. The number 2,500 is fairly arbitrary. I mean, I started out at 5,000, and I looked at how much money that would cost, and then I looked at 2,500, and you know, it's something that I think we can pass. And you know, as I said in my earlier remarks, if we discover that it's not having the impact that we think it should, that it's not enough, then we'll just have to work on increasing it.
Representative Anzalz. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Erdahl, I'd like to bring our attention back to the A2 amendment. And I'm just trying to, I think I'm, aren't I a co-author on this bill?
I think you're right up there on the first page somewhere.
I think I might be. And you know, I don't do tax credits lightly. You should know. But I'm looking particularly at 1.5 to 1.7. And you're defining core content area. On 1.6, you say arts. What does that mean?
Nice language.
Madam Chair?
Representative Erdahl.
Representative Dabney? I know it when I see it.
We might need more than that.
Representative Erdahl.
You know, do we have a definition of art in statute somewhere? I don't know.
Madam Chairman.
I mean, art is different things to different people.
Well,
and but in terms of educational instruction,
we have different licenses.
I don't know if we have it in statute.
So, Madam Chair, where I'm trying to go is less the I know it when I see it or the like, but when you say arts, does that, if I got a master's in music, if I got a master's in dance, if I got a master's in ceramics, if I got a master's in whatever, you know, that I was teaching.
Yeah.
If I was teaching it. Is that what you mean?
Yes, it is. It's something that you teach, Madam Chair.
Madam Chair. Thank you. And so, good, because those people are important too. But then I also wonder about other people who are important who I don't see reflected here. School social workers. A number of them already have master's degrees. They provide a valuable service in school. School counselors. School nurses. If this is good for core academic content because kids will get a better education, I would also argue kids will get a better education with a social worker who's better trained and has a deeper knowledge in his or her practice. Ditto a counselor, ditto a nurse. I'm probably still leaving some other folks out. And I guess I don't see, I got you on this one, CTE teachers in here, and I'm trying to understand your rationale. Then we've clarified one. What's your rationale for leaving the other folks off the table,
Madam Chair and Representative Dabney? I can't say that I have real good rationale. What I was trying to do was to focus on teachers, and as I said earlier, there are different areas that I agree we maybe could look at it. Once this program gets going, expanding to, again, nationally certified teachers, other areas that have been suggested to me. I'm not opposed to doing that. For this particular bill, at this particular time, I was trying to focus on just teachers in their core subject area. This is something that, you know, we can look at more, you know, between this stop and the next one, if you wanted to talk to me about things that we could do, but I don't want to get too far afield from my basic intent, which is focusing on the teacher.
Thank you, Representative.
Representative Quam, did you have a comment or a question?
Thank you, Madam. And, Chair, basically,
if the list isn't complete, let us help out the author and add something that might be omitted or make suggestions. And frankly, I commend someone that comes forward to try and fix a complex issue to make it better, who spent decades in the schools teaching. And, you know, instead of, arguing, well, we should have this or that on the list, let's work together and make this a better bill and make it more complete and effective. And that was my only input that I had on this frame of discussion.
Thank you. And Representative Quam, I think those suggestions were made in the light of...
I took them that way.
Of just clarifying the author's intent in that. So, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Chair Loon. Well, what Representative Erdahl is doing here is calling out core subjects in licensure areas. So these are the major areas in which teachers are licensed. And I think that's what his focus has been and probably should continue to be, because we have licenses and then those support content areas. And I think you're saying then proceed to get a master's in that content area that supports your licensure.
Thank you.
All right. I think, why don't we call on your testifier at this point? Welcome.
Hello, Madam Chair, members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and I'll be very brief given the great conversation you've had, and it's great to know that we've got at least our first commonality with Representative Slocum for the year, and looking forward to many more. And just in the sense that this is a great effort to try to build the content expertise of teachers in the field for which they're teaching. And as Representative Erdahl mentioned, this is one piece of an overall strategy for helping to do that. And, we encourage you to adopt it for all the reasons expressed today.
Thank you, Mr. Bartholomew. Other questions? Is there anyone else from the public who wishes to testify on this bill? All right. Not seeing either questions or additional testifiers. Representative Erdahl, any closing comments?
Thank you for the discussion, and I think we had a good airing of our thoughts.
Yes. All right. So with that, I will renew my motion that House File 245 as amended be passed on to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Any opposed?
No.
One opposed, and the motion is adopted, and your bill is on its way to the Tax Committee. Thank you very much, Representative Erdahl.
Thank you.
Where was that? No.
For $14.95,
you could give every new teacher a pair of soap. All right. Members, we have one additional bill up today. Representative or Chairman Knobloch, please join us. All right, so welcome, Chairman Knobloch. Nice to have you, and thanks for sitting in on the rest of the committee with us. We appreciate you being here today.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I hope to come to some of the other committees' meetings in the future, but as I said, I've got other conflicts at this time, and since I'm not an official member, I can only make it once in a while. I'd appreciate, Madam Chair, if someone could move House File 798, and then I have the A1 amendment, which is really essentially a technical amendment that I'd like to have put on, and I can explain that.
All right, so the chair moves House File 798 be referred to the Tax Committee, and then why don't you go ahead and describe the A1 amendment.
Okay. What the A1 amendment does, Madam Chair and members of the committee, is right now we have an education tax deduction in state law and an education tax credit. And both of them have been in statute for many years, but we do have different descriptions of them in the law. The only substantive difference between the two of them is that the education tax deduction, which we've actually had since 1955, allows a tax deduction for private school tuition. The education tax credit does not. This bill does have the education tax credit covering private school tuition, too. And so what the A1 amendment does is essentially just combines those two into the same definition. The education tax credit is already covering private school tuition in House File 798, so A1 doesn't change anything except it makes the language more clear.
All right. And with that, question is on adoption of the amendment to get the bill in the shape the author would like. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? All right. And then did you have an additional amendment you wish to have?
No, Madam Chair, I'm not going to offer that amendment.
Okay. All right. Yeah. So
if I can just present the bill, and I have one testifier, Madam Chair.
Yes. Please go ahead and describe your bill, Representative Knoblauch.
Okay. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House File 798 does a couple of things. First of all, what it does is it adjusts the education tax credit and the education tax deduction up to the inflation that has occurred since they were last adjusted back in the late 1990s. We've had, depending on how you measure it, maybe something like 45% inflation since that time. So it increases the deduction by about 50%, increases the tax credit by, I think it's 45%. We round the numbers to make it just a little bit more clear. But, for example, the tax deduction for K through 6 goes from $1,625 to $2,500 a student. For grade 7 through 12, if you have a child in that category, from $2,500 to $3,750 a student. Increases the size of the tax credit from $1,000 to $1,500. Increases the phase out at which the tax credit starts to phase out and you can no longer claim it from $33,500 to $47,500. The tax credit is essentially something that only lower to lower middle income families can use. Bill would adjust that to make up for the inflation that has taken place since that time and adjust it for inflation afterwards. The other thing it does do, as I mentioned, is we have had private school tuition qualify for a tax deduction in the state for 70 years, since 1955, and this would now allow private school tuition to also qualify as a qualifying expense underneath the education tax credit. Now, there are a lot of other expenses that already qualify. Supplies qualify, books qualify, computer software, tutoring, extracurricular activities if they're academic in nature. These are all items that can already be claimed as either the education tax credit or the education tax deduction. And this is not solely private school. This is public school, too. In fact, I would guess the majority of the claims are for public school students, although I don't know that for sure. But since there are many, many more public school students in the state than private school students, I would guess that there are more that are claiming these deductions and credits. But, Madam Chair, I'd appreciate the committee's support and your support in moving this to tax committee. I think that we should adjust this for inflation. I think that for a lot of public and private school families, the additional aid that's provided through these tax credits and deductions is something that's useful for them. And I know that there are some families, for whatever reason, find that a private school experience is better for their child, or they believe is better for their child than a public school experience. And this basically equalizes the credit with the deduction. So while we've had a private school deduction for 70 years, for a private school tuition, we now have that in the tax credit, too. And I do have one testifier, if he could step forward, Madam Chair.
Right, thank you. All right, welcome, and please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Jim Bartholomew with the Minnesota Business Partnership, and we're supporting House File 798. And just as a reminder, the education tax credits, and that's what I'm going to talk more specifically about, were created, as Representative Knoblauch said, in the late 90s, 1997,
as a way to help low-income families meet the educational needs of their students. And we very much support the updating the income eligibility and the credit amounts that are in this bill, bringing that back from 17 years almost now to more of a realistic level. We also do support including tuition as an eligible expense. This will help equalize options for low-income families. As Representative Knobloch said, again, these are families that for whatever reason believe a non-public school may best meet the needs of their kids. And without getting into a lot of detail and discussion as occurred in the policy committee, but we're also convinced that the research that has looked at expanding educational options for families has a positive benefit. So we just want to encourage you to support this as a way of updating the eligibility and expense amounts. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knobloch, Mr. Bartholomew, do you support then, based on the things that you've both said, do you support an inflation adjustment for the general ed formula too?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Mr. Chair, Representative Murphy, you know, if you go back to 1997 and look at K-12 spending, we have had an increase in total K-12 spending per student well beyond the inflation rate in this state. There isn't a lot of inflation at the moment. You know, it's maybe 1% a year. I guess I am expecting that we will have some additional money for education. I guess my personal views in terms of how that should be allocated in terms of money on the formula versus money for various categorical programs or elsewhere, I guess I haven't finalized any particular views on that.
Madam. Representative Murphy, or I'm sorry, Mr. Bartholomew.
Madam Chair and Representative Murphy, that may be one area with the bill that we differ in the sense that we think it's important to update the dollar amounts, the eligibility, as well as the credit amounts. It's been about 17 years, but we would not encourage you to automatically inflate them with an inflator.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Detmer. Other questions? Quiet group today. All right, and I do, we were informed that a couple of other people wanted to testify. So if there's anyone in the audience who wishes to offer comments on this legislation, you'd make your way down. Welcome. Please state your name for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Gary Amoroso, Executive Director, Minnesota Association of School Administrators. Thank you for allowing us a minute to share a couple of thoughts. When these bills were heard in our Education Innovation Policy Committee, we shared the thought, and we'd like to share with you that we have some concerns about education tax credits going to non-public schools. We understand that this is not part of the K-12 budget or E-12 budget, but there is the budget that will be created by the state of Minnesota, and so we try to look at it, you know, from a global perspective. And anytime, from our perspective, we begin to take dollars away from the, not necessarily away from the public schools, but direct them towards private schools, that's a concern. Our state constitution is very clear that our state is required to provide an educational experience for our children, to fund that, and that is where we would like to see the focus remain when we talk about finances in the state. I also appreciate the comments by Representative Murphy, and I do appreciate the concept of tying the inflationary increase to some of these provisions. And we certainly hope that as we move down the pathway this session and we have the conversation about E-12 funding and hopefully the general ed formula, that we can have a conversation about inflationary increase being tied to it.
Thank you. Please identify yourself for the record.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. My name is Scott Kronquist with the Association of Metropolitan School Districts, and appreciate the opportunity to offer just a few concerns about House File 798. Share the same concerns, actually, that Mr. Amoroso identified. We do believe that your duty as a state legislature is to adequately fund our public school system. In fact, and we're all familiar with it, but I think it's from time to time it's good to hear it. Article 13, Section 1 of the Constitution provides for a uniform system of public schools, and it says the stability of a republican form of government, depending mainly upon the intelligence of the people, it is the duty of the legislature to establish a general and uniform system of public schools. The legislature shall make such provisions by taxation or otherwise will secure a thorough and efficient system of public schools throughout the state. So it's a pretty clear, I think, mandate to you as legislators. I don't think there's a lot of ambiguity in the Constitution. And quite frankly, Madam Chair, members, we are not, as a state, and this is not borne by this legislature, this committee, but as a state over the years, we have not lived up to that obligation, quite frankly. We are in a situation where we are $216 million short of funding our state special ed formula. Okay, that's nothing to do with the feds. That's the state formula is underfunded by $216 million. If our basic formula had kept pace with inflation since 2003, it in fact would be over $1,000 per pupil higher today than it is right now. And I could talk about facilities and teacher development evaluation and on and on. Bottom line is we are not providing that uniform system of public schools. And so we think before you consider tuition credits for private school tuition, we should instead focus on funding our public schools. Thank you, Madam Chair, members.
Mr. Kernquist, thank you.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Brad Lundell from Schools for Equity and Education. I just say when issues like this come up, I realize how old I'm getting because I was here in 1997 when and lobbying on education when the tax credit was created. And just to give everyone a little bit of a history lesson, there was almost a government shutdown over this issue back in 1997. And a lot of it dealt with the tuition tax credit issue. There was a line, it was a line in the sand to some extent back then, and I think that it remains a line in the sand today. I think Mr. Kronquist summed it up best along with Mr. Amoroso, and I'll just say that from our perspective in Schools for Equity Education, we believe that, again, public education should be first in line here, and I think that very, very important that we take care of that system, as the Constitution says, and certainly look forward to continuing this conversation. But again, this is a very, very touchy subject with the public school community, and we certainly want to put our stake in the ground on this one. So thank you very much.
Representative Knobloch.
You know, and Madam Chair, I would just like to say I guess it's touchy for Mr. Lundell. I'm kind of surprised it is. We've had a tax deduction for private school tuition and law in this state for 70 years. It's been tested in court and upheld. Governors of both parties have supported this sort of thing. Rudy Perpich supported it back when he was governor in terms of the deduction. We have no argument. In fact, a Democratic governor right now who is supporting an expansion of a tax credit for pre-K private school operators. We have a college private school tuition program, the state grant program, which we give hundreds of millions of dollars to private school, private colleges in this state. And I guess I really do fail to see the difference here. But I certainly respect people's opinions. This is not a huge expansion in my mind. All private schools in the state that I'm aware of cost more than $1,500. And this is, by the way, 75% credit. So in order to get the $1,500, you'd have to actually, that would only be 75% of what you were spending. You'd have to spend, $2,000. So, members, again, I think all we're doing here is adjusting things to make up for inflation for something that has been adjusted in almost 20 years, and we're conforming the tax credit to the tax deduction that's been in law for 70 years.
Thank you, Representative Knobloch. Ms. Kelleher, did you wish to testify?
Mm-hmm. Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to share a few words. I want to...
And please, I'm sorry, please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Grace Kelleher. I represent the Minnesota School Boards Association. We represent every locally elected school board from around the state of Minnesota. We're here to say, to really share two trigger issues that this bill brings forward that really compelled me to come down at this point. And it is the expansion of tuition. I think my members have concerns about that. They certainly understood the computers, the supplies, the tutoring. We were sort of all okay with those, but this expansion of tuition is something we're really concerned about. The other thing is the inflationary catch-up piece, and I think that makes it difficult for K-12 school board members from around the state who've been in a role of cutting and somehow feel like we never get out of that hole to once again see a program that's easily inflated when those are the words really local school board members dream of hearing every day. So those are really the two pivotal issues for us on this bill, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Questions? I've got a list, Representative Erickson. I'll come back to you. Representative Dabney.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And a question or two for the author. I'm looking at page 6.5, where you insert tuition into the current credit, which is clearly your intent, and you've been very clear about that. But then I look at lines 5.25 to 5.32, where it explicitly says on 5.28, textbooks does not include instructional books and materials used in the teaching of religious tenets, doctrines, or worship, the purpose of which is to instill such tenets, doctrines, or worship, and so on. I mean, clearly there's some attempt to respect that I should not be compelled through my tax dollars to subsidize your faith practices and traditions and instructions in those. And I think we can all accept that, whether it's regardless of your faith tradition and regardless of what school, what parochial school we may be talking about. But I don't understand then how the inclusion of tuition and the clear intent of 5.25 to 5.32 fits together. Because if I'm choosing a parochial school, regardless of the religious underpinnings, it's because those faith traditions are taught not in a room down the hall on Friday, but are pervasive throughout the curriculum. And so that separation can't, in fact, exist. And I think many years ago, I volunteered on a crisis hotline, doing an undergraduate degree in psychology and social work. And I was asked to go out and speak on suicide to a school group, in a private school group at a Catholic school. And in the middle of my presentation, the teacher interrupted and said, "So, which of the Ten Commandments does suicide violate?" She was embedding the faith tradition of that school into my secular presentation. Well, that's fine that the school has that faith tradition and teaches that, but it doesn't then allow for the separation of secular purpose from faith purpose. And I think also, you know, to update by, I don't know, 30 years or so, 2012, where the local archdiocese, St. Paul in Minneapolis, not your archdiocese in St. Cloud, had mandatory attendance programs at its schools, where it attempted to rally students for the anti-marriage amendment that they'd successfully worked to get on the ballot from a faith perspective. So again, now you're saying tuition to a religious school should be deductible while the religious school is using that money to propagate the faith of its the tenets of its faith, including in mandatory required presentations. How do we respect that Minnesotans shouldn't be required to subsidize face that they don't follow themselves.
Representative Nava.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney. Well, a couple things. First of all, of course, the private school tuition that's talked about here does not have to go to a religious school. It can go to an atheist school. It can go to any private school that's out there, whether it's got a particular faith tradition or not. So there's no requirement that in order to get the tax credit that you have to send your child to a religiously based school. But secondly, we're not giving this money to the school. This is not a voucher. This is a tax credit. This is a tax credit that is going to parents based on them qualifying themselves for the tax credit. This has been tried in court and found constitutional many years ago. So there's no separation of church and state constitutionality problems. I guess I'm not proposing to change the textbook standard. I will say that to the extent that there may be religion taught in private schools, and probably most there is, and some there's not, the great majority of the time the student will not be engaged in religious instruction, but will be engaged in learning about math or reading or any number of other subjects. And so I would guess that the great minority of any time they are spending in the school is going to be based on actual religious instruction. And again, remember that 25% of the credit or 25% of the tuition is not something that the parents can get back as a tax credit, and that it's been found constitutional anyway. And so, Representative Dabney, I guess I don't find any conflict in that.
Madam Chair.
Dabney.
Thank you. Well, certainly Representative Knobloch, you're correct that there's no requirement that you enroll your child in a faith-based private school in order to secure this credit under your proposal, but there's also no prohibition and no protection for Minnesota taxpayers that they shouldn't be required through the tax system to subsidize the faith traditions of others and to respect that traditional American value of a separation of church and state and due respect to all faiths, but I don't have to subsidize my neighbor's church, my neighbor's religious leader who also runs the school, my neighbor's faith choices as it permeates their children's school experience. And then to your earlier comments about this isn't a significant expansion and the governor's proposal for universal pre-K and his support for the early education scholarships and the often false equivalency made to college grants and the like. Neither of those programs or none of those programs have the same constitutional standing in Minnesota as our K-12 system does. And the earlier testifiers were more articulate to our constitutional obligation than I. Thank you.
Madam Chair, if I could also respond and say, well, Representative Dabney, I mean, in terms of you saying that somehow this is compelling you and your neighbors to subsidize private schools, well, in the first place, as I pointed out before, we've had a tax deduction in this state for 70 years for private school tuition going way, way back into the 1950s. In that sense, we've already been subsidizing, but I don't think it's subsidizing. By your argument, Representative Dabney, you're also saying we shouldn't have a charitable tax deduction, because if I happen to give money to my church, then somehow you're saying that I'm taking away tax revenue from the state because I gave money to my church, I'm therefore going to deduct it, I'm therefore going to pay fewer taxes. Somehow that affects you. I guess I just don't agree with that line of reasoning. This is not a voucher where we're giving money directly to the school. This is a tax credit or a tax deduction that already exists where parents are choosing to turn these expenses into the state and thus get reimbursement.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Representative Knobloch, you know and I know your example was a tax deduction. This is a tax credit. Those are different beasts.
Madam Chair, there's still a situation where you're getting a tax benefit from the state. But I'll take other questions.
Representative Erickson.
Well, mine's not a question, but just a comment that I believe in PSCO credits, we send about $28 million to our colleges to provide that choice for our students. And I believe about half of that goes to private colleges.
Thank you, Representative. Representative Quam.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I'm trying to understand, you know, part of the intent, is it to allow parents the freedom or more freedom to select the best option of education for their children that the parents decide, and whether that is PSEO, as was just mentioned, because for some students going to college through PSEO is the best for their kids, or you know, going to a private school or a homeschool, etc. And I'm just trying to understand if part of the motivation here is to allow additional options for those that don't have the excess wealth to send their kids to, you know, anything. You know, if I don't have the money, I don't have the options. And I'm just wondering if the motivation is to assist the parents that don't have that excess wealth some of the options that other members of the state have.
Representative
Knobloch. Well, Madam Chair, Representative Quam, you know, I think about the achievement gap, and I think about students that in some of our school districts are, for whatever reason, not succeeding. And there are various reasons that students don't succeed. And I would never say that private schools are the answer to everything, or that private schools even necessarily always provide a better school experience than public schools. I'm a product of public education. I went through the St. Cloud Public Schools grades K through 12, and I got a great education. And I am very happy for the education that I got there. But I think that for some students, one system works better than others. I think that if you look at some of our school districts, clearly students, particularly those from poorer or lower income families, are very challenged and having a hard time succeeding. And this is a bill that would help provide some choices for some of those families that otherwise would not be able to make a choice, and perhaps get their student into a school that might work better for them.
Representative Mariani.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Dabney, for trying to make some distinctions here, which I think have been glossed over in the testimony. I don't know of a, I may be wrong, but I don't know of a Minnesota State decision that's been made relative to using a tax credit for tuition purposes in our state. That may well be in other states, but you know, our mandate exists very explicitly, as was read by Mr. Kronquist, under our Minnesota State Constitution. I don't think that decision has come down. However, I want to take a slightly different tact on this issue and this question to you, on this issue and a question to you, Representative Knobloch. Now that we're going to use Minnesota taxpayer dollars to cover the full tuition costs of a private institution, be it parochial or otherwise, is it going to be your posture going forward that the state of Minnesota apply the same accountability standards that we apply to all our public schools who are using public school, or rather the public's taxpayer dollars, to operate their schools?
Representative Knobloch.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, first of all, I did not say that this had been, that the tax credit had been upheld. I did say the tax deduction had been upheld.
That's a good distinction. Thank you. I appreciate that.
Well, and I think I was clear on that earlier, Representative Mariani, but I don't really see that there is a difference. Firstly, it's not true that this bill pays for the full cost of private school. In the first place, there aren't any private schools that you can get for $1,500. In the second place, This is not a full 100% refundable tax credit. It's only a 75% refundable tax credit, so a family is going to have to put some of their own money into this no matter what, even if the tuition of the school was only $2,000, and I'm not aware of any private schools in the state that have a tuition of only $2,000, even if there were, they'd still have to be putting in 25% of it, the $500. I guess I can direct you to a couple of there's a federal district court in Minnesota in the Minnesota Civil Liberties Union versus Romer in 1978. There's Mueller versus Allen, the U.S. Supreme Court upheld the deduction in 1983. So the deduction has been upheld at the U.S. Supreme Court level, and I guess I really don't see a distinction in terms of, I mean, the deduction versus the credit. You're still having the taxpayer be able to get some tax benefit out of the private school expense that they have. But I want to get to your other question, Representative Mariani, and that is in terms of the school responsibility for accountability. We do have some requirements that private schools have in this state, and I think that most private schools require some sort of a test. I believe that the diocese in Minneapolis is going to be going to some sort of a standardized test that they require of all of their students. But, you know, whether that's the case or not, we're only talking about a minor amount of money here compared to the average tuition for most of these schools. And I think that we're not requiring that for colleges where we are subsidizing private colleges through the state grant program. We're not requiring it of preschool programs, and so I don't know why the motivation would be that we have to require it here if we're not in those other areas.
Madam Chair.
Representative Mariani.
Well, thank you for the question, Representative Knobloch. I would again direct you to our state constitution that does not require a legislative duty relative to those two other systems here. I mean, that is the issue here. It seems to me that, my advice to you and others who propose this is to think very seriously about an accountability system here. I don't know why we would expend taxpayer dollars without having an accountability back other than a wishful thinking on whether the Archbishop up in St. Paul is going to decide whether or not to implement some kind of a standardized test or not. That's not how we operate in Minnesota relative to the education of our young people through our public education systems. We have very high rigorous standards and expectations out of our systems. We're struggling to meet those. But, you know, frankly, it's an honest struggle based on some very clearly articulated high rigorous standards that we're applying to our schools and that we're holding them, quite frankly, accountable under the world's best workforce. Led by Representative Marquardt a couple of years ago, we're so serious about that we're saying, you know, public schools, if you're not meeting these goals, we're going to start going into your foundation formula and removing a part of that in order to help you to get to those goals. This bill, as far as I can see, goes in a totally opposite direction. It just throws money at a system, yes, admittedly through parents who are going to be investing in that system, but nonetheless, to the same effect, to cover the tuition expenses, the operating expenses of that school. And so I feel very strongly about this issue, as you know, because we debated, had a little bit of fun in the policy committee. But, you know, quite frankly, my advice is if you're going to move forward with this, is to really wrap your mind and other people wrap their minds around whether or not we're going to be a people who are going to hold our education delivery systems accountable for the proper education of our young people. I don't see that in this bill at this point.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Mariani, let me just say I certainly do support the Minnesota Constitution, and I support us meeting the requirements of it, and I don't see anything in this bill that would somehow cause that to not be met.
Representative Seltzer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Knobloch, I'm wondering, I have two questions. Do you have a breakdown of the number of children on free and reduced lunch that are taking advantage currently of the K-12 deduction? And since we'll be expanding the credit to non-public school tuition, do you have projections of the numbers of children on free and reduced lunch, families that we that you are hoping will take advantage of this credit?
Madam Chair, Representative Seltzer, I don't yet have a revenue estimate for this bill, so I can't easily provide that information to you. You know, I can only, I guess, say anecdotally, I was for a time on the board of a small private school in St. Cloud, and our experience there, their tuition was like $5,000 or $6,000 a year. My experience there was that we had approximately the same percentage of people there that qualified for free and reduced school lunch as in the general public school population in the area. You know, that's just anecdotal from my experience, but I would guess that if you look at the education tax credit, the great majority of the people that are getting it right now qualify for free and reduced lunch, because right now the credit phases out or begins to phase out at a family income of $33,500. So I don't recall the exact eligibility issues for free and reduced school lunch, but given that the education tax credit is a program for poor and relatively lower middle income families and will remain so underneath my bill as amended, I would guess that the majority of them would qualify for free and reduced school lunch.
Representative Seltzer.
It would be, thank you, Representative Nalbach. It would be helpful though if we, you know, had that information.
I am Madam Chair. Representative Seltzer, once I get the revenue estimate, and I wish I had it by now, I asked for it quite a while ago, I can probably provide that and would be happy to do so.
Thank you, Representative. Other questions? Representative Murphy.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Knobloch, thinking about the amendment that you put on and then some statements that you've made about the deduction being the same as a credit, I'm not sure all Minnesotans agree, and that's a tax committee decision, I guess, whether it is or not. But you've brought up several times that the deduction has been in existence for 70 years and supported, and I have supported it all these years. Maybe not 70, but a long
time. I'm sure not 70.
A long time. But I think people think that there's a difference between a credit and a deduction. And I think they have great respect for the deduction that's been in existence for 70 years. And I think tying the two together as the same is a mistake. I also think that adding inflation in this instance and not for the general ed formula and other things is a mistake. And I think this discussion this afternoon has been just great, and I wish I had heard it in policy, so I have to go back and listen now to hear where else it went. But I'm wondering if there would be any purpose for further discussion and thought if we held this in this committee for a while rather than send it immediately to taxes. Because I think there has to be a few more clarifications on the education part of this before we release it and send it to committee. But I also can count. And so I have to work on my friends on the tax committee and tell them about my apprehensions, I will do that. But I think we need further discussion on whether it's all the same. And I'm not sure we're ready to say Yes, it is all the same.
Well, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I guess I, you know, when I say they are the same, first of all, I don't think I've ever said they are the same. But, you know, they are both tax items. To the extent they're the same, I guess what I'm talking about is in both ways we are allowing parents to get a tax benefit for some money they spent on their children in either public or private school. And so it's not a direct state subsidy. We're not cutting any checks to private schools. I mean, in that sense, they are similar because they are both tax items. And, you know, I certainly respect you, Representative Murphy, in your opinion, but I, you know, obviously would hope that this bill can progress along as the other bill that was adjusting the tax credit for inflation, Representative Anderson's, was moved along earlier today.
Representative Murphy.
Madam Chair, but the difference, not in Representative Anderson's bill, but in what you're saying is that we're going to take a choice away from families, from Minnesota families, whether they have a credit or whether they have a deduction. We're not going to keep the deduction in there. We're saying it's the same as the tax credit. Am I totally misunderstanding?
No, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy. No, we're keeping the deduction. The deduction will remain. We'll just adjust it for inflation. The credit will be there. It'll be adjusted for inflation. The deduction is really something that, frankly, benefits higher-income people more. We'll just, now the credit would be available for private school tuition as the deduction has been for many years.
Representative
Knobloch, are you saying that some families will be able to have a deduction and a credit at the same time?
Representative Knobloch.
You know, Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, I think that's a question maybe I can ask Ms. Manzi. I was, I'm actually not sure about that.
Ms. Manzi.
Sure, it's fine. Madam Chair, just a moment, and let me find a line on the bill we want to look at. Madam Chair, Representative Murphy, members of the committee, if you look on page 1, lines 18 to 19, and this is the language that provides for the deduction, it reads, the amount paid to others less the amount used to claim the credit under section 290.0674, and that section is the K-12 education credit that we're discussing. So you may only claim the deduction for amounts that you do not use to claim the credit.
Members, need further clarification from Ms. Manzi? Representative Dabney?
Madam Chair, Ms. Manzi, what other situations when I incur a tax-preferred expenditure do I get to claim twice on my income taxes, once as a deduction and once as a credit? Can you give us other examples, please?
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, you do not, under current law and under Representative Knobloch's bill, you do not get to claim both the deduction and the credit for the same expenses. If you have the maximum expenses for the credit and you still have expenses beyond that, then you may claim the additional expenses you have above the maximum that qualify for the credit as the deduction. But you may not claim the same expenses for both items. You may not, the term that we sometimes use is double dipping. You may not double dip. And I'd have to think for a while. Nothing is immediately coming to mind. I'm having a little deer in the headlight moments about whether there are any items in the tax code that allow people to double dip. There may well be, but none are coming to mind.
Madam Chair.
Representative Dabney.
Ms. Manzi, I don't know if you're familiar with Izzy's ice cream.
Now you're really going to stump her.
So Izzy's is a great place, manufactured in Minneapolis. but also here in St. Paul and Grand Avenue. So when the weather's better, it's not far from the Capitol. I'd encourage people to go. There, you order whatever you want. You get your scoop. You get your credit. And then you get a little Izzy on top. They take out a smaller scoop and plop that on top. Is that the deduction?
Representative, or Ms. Manzi.
Because it's just a little bit. It's what's left. I mean, it's not what's left over, but in this case, I get a nice big scoop of fill in the blank. What's your favorite?
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, it depends on the day.
Fair enough. But I get a nice big scoop of depends on the day, which is the deduction.
It's the credit.
Pardon me. Thank you for correcting me, Ms. Manzi. You often do, and when you don't, you get to snicker about it, because I know you do that, too. And then I get the Izzy on top, and that's the deduction.
Ms. Manzi.
Madam Chair, Representative Dabney, I think perhaps it might be good to step back and think about the eligibility for the programs. And under current law, the credit begins to phase out when household income reaches $33,500, and the maximum credit is $1,000 per child, per qualifying child. Now, the credit is 75% of qualifying expenses, so you would have to spend, I didn't figure out this math in advance, but it's going to be around $1,200 in order to get the $1,000 credit. At that point, if this family only has one child, if they then wish to spend pay for additional qualifying expenses for the child, if the child is in grades K through 6, then they can claim the $1,625 deduction. Now, in most cases, this family is probably not going to have very much tax liability, because their income is under $33,500. Let's say it's a married couple, because I know that standard deduction amount is just over $10,000. Now you're down to $23,500, and then you deduct $4,000 for each of the three people in the household for their personal independent exemptions. So you've taken another $12,000 off of that, so you're down to around $12,000 of taxable income, to which you would apply a tax rate of 5.35%, which would be $600. And they have just qualified for a $1,000 tax credit, which they're going to take off and is going to fully offset their income tax. They could indeed also be deducting the $1,625, but it's not going to provide them with any tax benefit, because their tax has already gone to zero. So,
Madam Chair, she did that all without a piece of paper in front of her to take notes.
That's why she is Ms. Manzi.
Absolutely. Thank you.
All right, members, we have run over time. So with that, Representative Knobloch, any closing comments?
I'd appreciate your support on the bill today. I think this is a reasonable bill that updates things to inflation and conforms the tax credit with the deduction we've had in law for 70 years.
All right. Well, so thank you. I would renew my motion that House File 798 be, as amended, be referred to the Tax Committee. All in favor say aye.
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 Opposed?
No.
All right. In the opinion of the Chair, the ayes have it. Motion is passed. We are adjourned for today. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members.